Welcome, everyone, to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is tips and tricks for use of the DataPower Multi-Step Pro debugging tool. The presenters are Moses Alate and Matthias Siebler. Moses has 6 years with IBM working as DataPower Level 2 software engineer. His area of expertise are XML, XSLT technologies, WebSphere services, integration, security, multi-step processing, and device monitoring. Matthias has worked with DataPower for over 10 years, the last 7 at IBM. He has been the Level 3 support team lead for the last 4 years. His area of expertise include network protocols and debugging, DataPower best practices, and multi-step programming. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Moses.
Thank you, Kathy. And thanks to everyone that has been able to, you know, make the time to join. So, today, Matthias and I will talk about the use of the multi-step probe. The presentation will be, you know, we'll try to provide information to, help make it better for you to understand how to use the probe to debug the processing policy. And we'll talk about some useful tips and tricks and also some pitfalls to avoid. Slide number 2, please. So for today, we'll start by looking at, you know, what is the probe, right? And we'll also look at, you know, how the probe works, you know, from an external point of view. I will cover that, and Matthias will, you know, take us through, you know, looking at the probe from the internal view, right? And what you can use the probe to do and what you cannot use the probe for, right? And some common misconceptions, some cautions to also be aware of, right? And issues when it comes to using a probe and the user agent, as well as the, you know, content type handling when the probe is enabled. Can we please go to slide number 3? Okay, so for people that are very familiar with, DataPower, this is an SOA appliance, so, you have the ability to create services, to help, take on requests from clients, and also, communicate with some, with some endpoint, which can be the back end of the service. Now, when the transactions are received from the client or responses received from the back end, there is the option for you to apply some, processing to it or, apply some, processing rules, to the messages or, to the transactions as they flow through the box. What happens is, all of this ends up being something that is internal and, you need a way if something goes wrong, from the time that you receive the request from the client to the time that you send it to the back end, or the time that you receive the response from the back end and you forward that to the client, you want to know, if the processing policy that you applied really took effect, right? So the probe is what you use as a troubleshooting tool to look at that part of your processing policy to see what is happening. Right, and when you use the probe, you end up getting the ability to, step through the execution of the different actions that you perform, when you apply the policy to the transaction. Now, from the probe, you'll be able to, get information about the transactions that are captured. So when a transaction flows through the appliance, Depending upon your service configuration, so long as it's not a pass-through service, these transactions will be captured by the probe when the probe is enabled. And you'll be able to get details about that transaction, right? So you'll be able to see the context of, context variables, that were set or some variables that were used during that, processing step. Right. Now, this too, is an invaluable tool, during the, developmental, phase, right? Because that is where you're more interested on, you're more interested in knowing if this step completed correctly, or if something goes wrong, you want to be able to have that ability to, take a look at that, and see, what part of my, processing rule, introduce this, changing behavior, right? So, this is what you want to be looking at. Can we please go to slide number 4? So on this slide, we can see an image of what the probe, looks like when it's enabled. So in there, we can see a transaction has been captured. Now, the transaction in this case is the, complete life cycle, right? Meaning that the request that came through the box and the response that was sent to the client, all of that cycle, will make, that transaction. And in this case, whatever rules that were applied, will be captured, by the probe, once again, granted, the response or the request type is not passed through. So when we look at the probe and it's enabled, right, the data gets captured. There are different columns, that is good to know, as to, what those are, what those mean. So in this case, you can see the first column is the view column. And that has a magnifying glass. So that helps you to be able to say, okay, I want to take a look at this, execution rule. And if you click on that, you'll be able to get more details as to the step-by-step actions that were performed when the rule got called. The next column is a transaction number. Now, on this transaction, this transaction number is something that is really good to know, because when you want to review the system logs that correspond, with this transaction, you want to use this transaction number. Now, one cool thing about the probe is when it captures the data and the logs are still available, they haven't rolled over, if you click on that transaction number, it's going to pop up another window and extract all logs pertaining to that transaction ID. So it can be an easy way for you to, quickly, get access to the logs that are relevant to that transaction. The type column, tells you what direction of processing, was taking place, right? So in this case, you can see there's a type, the first row, says request. So that transaction tells you, okay, this is a client to server type rule, that was, running, right? And you can see the next row has a type of response, right? So from here, if you have, any issues or you want to look at a specific part of your processing policy, you can quickly get access to that. If for whatever reason during processing you actually had an error, and depending upon the type of configuration you have, if error rules are invoked, you see them, listed as well. If you use call actions to call other rules, you see those rules also listed. So you'll be able to tell, from this view, what type of rule was actually invoked. you have the inbound and outbound URLs. So the inbound URL will show you the URL that came from the client request. And then the outbound is the outbound URL that the request from Dataply is going to be forwarded to. So in this case, a request came in from, you know, some client, and then outbound will show where we ended up sending that data to. The rule column tells you the name of the rule. So even though you know, okay, this was, you know, called on the request, you know, path, you want to know, okay, I have five different rules, you know, on the request to handle different, you know, that match on different or that have different match conditions, right? So I want to know this was supposed to match on just, let's say, get request. Now, the rule that got selected, based on the rule column, I can quickly know did the correct rule get called. Right, so from here, you could also click on the rule name and you'd be able to go straight to the processing, you know, rule definition and have a look at that processing rule and even take a closer look at what the match expression was or the location of that rule, because probably that rule has been set lower than, you know, the current rule that is getting called. Then you have the last column, which is the client IP. So the client IP, in this case, tells you which client made that request. So in most cases, if you have a load balancer in front of, you know, Dataply, you know, that client IP will most likely always show your load balancer IP. Right. So, you know, this is just a high-level view. On the next page, we'll take a closer look at what happens when you click on the magnifying glass under the view column. So can we please go to slide number 5? So on this page, you can see the step-by-step, you know, display, right, of a specific rule that you were interested in, right? So in this case, you click on one processing rule and you'll be able to see, okay, these were the actions that were supposed to, you know, take place. And you can see, you know, probably if you know that it was supposed to be five actions, and let's say you're supposed to, you know, verify the message, you could see, you know, that probably verification, you know, failed. Right, and you'll be able to, you know, see that from the probe. If everything goes well, the rule is going to be, you know, showed as, you know, black. If there were any, you know, processing errors, it's going to, you know, show as red. But just to point out that, you know, these are, you know, processing errors that are not so much of logical errors. You know, in a case that, let's say, you have a style sheet and that style sheet has, you know, some if statement which causes a different output to get produced, right? So the probe is not going to catch that logical error, right? So, but the probe can help you see that, okay, you know, this was an input that came into the action and by the time it came out, it was different. So This screenshot, you know, shows you the step-by-step, you know, display where, in this case, the first, you know, action that took place was to validate the message that was received. This is the screenshot of the, you know, graphical view when you click on the request, you know, role, right? So the first step is to, you know, validate. The next step is to sign and then encrypt and then, you know, forward that on to the back end. So from here, you can quickly see, you know, just by using the magnifying glasses, you know, in between the actions that are shown, you can quickly see that, okay, the inputs that went to my validate, you know, this is what the data looks like. You can click on the, you know, next magnifying glass, you know, if you're going from left to right, on the screenshot, you can click on the next magnifying glass. That is going to be between the validate and the sign action. And that will also show you, you know, depending upon how these actions are changed, you know, meaning, you know, if the output of, you know, validate or the first action ends up being the input to the next action, right? So the magnifying shows, the magnifying glass shows, you know, if it's in front of the action, it shows the data that made it into that action, right? So you can quickly, you know, step through. And as you step through, you know, each of these magnifying glass at any given point in time, you get the option to look at the actual data. You can also step through different tabs, which you can see at the lower section of the screenshot, right? You can look at the headers that came in with the message, right? So if you're interested in knowing, okay, I know my request type that came in, you know, was application/JSON, right? And I'm doing some processing, and I expected that by the time this rule completed and, you know, was ready to send the data out, the content type should have, you know, changed from, you know, application/JSON to, you know, text/XML. But when you looked at the content type, you're like, okay, you know, this has changed, but it has changed to probably text/HTML. You know, so you can quickly use this to, you know, also track down, you know, to see which, you know, step during processing may have introduced this different content type, right? If you have attachments that came with the message, in this case, if we're doing maybe, you know, MTOM, or if we're doing SOAP with attachments, you can click on the attachment tab and you'll be able to see, you know, details of that attachment. You'll be able to also get to, you know, look at the actual data, the actual attachment data. Then the next few tabs are, you know, more of the variables that you can access, you know. So you can look at, you know, local variables that were used, you know, during the execution of a specific action. You can look at, you know, context variables that have been set so far in the lifespan of the transaction. You can look at global variables that have been set. And you can, you know, get access to service variables. Right, so from this page, you'll be able to get a lot of details about the transaction that you are looking at, or the specific rule that you are looking at. Slide number six, please. So, how does the probe work? You know, from an external point of view, right? So, for you to get the probe enabled, you need to go to a specific service that you're interested in. So, once again, these transactions are going to be captured, you know, based on how you define a service. And the transactions will be, you know, stuff that your service is going to handle. So a client sends a request to a data power service, then, you know, probably depending upon, you know, once again, if it's not pass through request type, you may end up, you know, applying some processing policy to it. It goes to the back end, you get back a response. So if you're interested in knowing, okay, you know, my back end isn't getting the correct, you know, data, you go and you activate this on that specific service. So the activation is per service basis, right? And when you activate that, you know, and you save, that is not going to be part of your persistent configuration. Now, the probe is not available on, you know, every service on the box, right? So there's an option when you use the multiple core gateway service, external firewall, or the web service proxy, right? So you'll be able to enable the probe and take a closer look at the transaction processing as it flows through the box. Now, when you enable and disable the probe, there are certain steps that have to take place to, you know, get a probe attached to the service. And this causes, you know, a temporary interruption, you know, of the service, because the service has to bounce, and a slight, you know, modification of the service state, you know, takes place. So the service is disabled and re-enabled, you know, to ensure that the probe is attached correctly. Slide number 7, please. So the probe has, you know, different settings. Now, there are also different ways that you can, you know, get access to the probe. If you use the task template, you know, that is going through the control panel and, you know, selecting one of the services. So if it's multi-protocol gateway, you go ahead and click that, and then you get the service list. You click that, you know, like the service of interest, and then you'll be able to do show probe, and from there you'll be able to enable the probe. When you do that, the mode is going to be set to off. When you disable the probe, the mode is going to be, when you do show probe and you click on enable probe, the mode for the probe is going to be set to on. When you disable, it's going to be set to off. Now, if you want more control over that, by default, when you do, when the mode is on, there's the limit, which is the global, you know, maximum of 3 concurrent probe transactions that is going to be captured. Right, so if you have more than, you know, maybe, you know, 3 services that has the probe enabled and they have a lot of transactions going on, you could hit situations where, you know, you might end up scratching your head to say, you know, I keep sending requests to you know, service 1, which I expect to, you know, capture the probe, but it's not. The data is not being captured, right? So, because by default, when you enable, there is a global maximum of 3 concurrent transactions. Now, if you go through the objects menu, which you can, you know, get access, you know, from using the left navigation, and you get access to the service configuration, and you go to a specific service, you know, once again, you can go to the external firewall, web service proxy, or, you know, MPG. You'll be able to change, you know, you'll be able to change this, right, to unbounded, right? Now, when you, you know, do that, it expands the concurrency, right? And also, by default, there is historical data that is going to be, you know, collected. So the probe is going to hold, by default, is going to hold 25 transactions. So the, you know, most recent 25, you know, transactions. And when you go ahead and change the mode to unbounded, you end up getting this to, you know, go to the maximum of 250. So by default, you can, you know, even when you have this set, if you have the mode set to on, you still be able to change the history count. And in this case, the lowest is 10. The maximum, you know, history count is 250, and the default is the 25, right? So, you know, this helps, you know, limits the amount of, you know, RAM disk that gets used, right? So, as you enable this, you also have to keep in mind, as you enable the probe, you have to keep in mind that it's going to be using some resources, right? So, you know, depending upon the number of transactions that you want to capture, you just want to, you know, keep in mind and the footprint of these transactions, right? Now, the probe also has some very powerful, you know, feature, which is the probe trigger. And on the next slide, you know, slide 8, we'll take a closer look at the, you know, probe trigger. right? So, you know, there's a case where you probably might be interested in, you know, knowing, okay, if I have, you know, X number of transactions that are going through the box, or through this specific service, you know, but I want to limit, right, the number of transactions that will be captured by the probe. You can use the, you know, trigger options to, you know, help you, you know, narrow the number of transactions to, you know, capture, right? So in this case, you can start by looking at the client's IP, right? So you could say, you know, if let's say you're interested in a specific client, you know, and that client probably, you know, keeps complaining that they get like the wrong output, you could use the, you know, probe options, which in this case, it's available when you go through the objects menu, right? And you click on the service that you're interested in, you'll be able to, you know, scroll through the, you know, many tabs, and one of the tabs will be the probe trigger tab, and you'll be able to, you know, set, you know, these options, right? So, you know, if you're interested in a specific client, you can go ahead and, you know, put that client IP in there. If you want, you know, to do this based on the incoming URL, you can, you know, say, okay, you know, can specify the URI of interest that will cause the, you know, probe to only capture that. So this, in essence, can look like, you know, like a way to, you know, filter some of the transactions that are coming, right? If you're interested in, you know, only situations where, you know, the issue seems to happen when the URI to the back end, you know, has some specific strings in there, you can do that as well, right? If you know of, you know, the direction, you know, meaning that if it's a request, you know, rule that, you know, seems to be of interest, you know, you can use a rule type to, you know, choose that, right? Or if it's a response, you can, you know, do that as well. You can also go ahead and, you know, provide a rule match. So the rule matches, you know, to say, hey, you know, if any rule gets, you know, called, and let's say it has get in that rule name, you know, I want the probe to, you know, capture that transaction, right? Or you can apply, you know, XFAT to the request that gets sent, you know. So once again, if you have, you know, let's say a specific client, you know, that, you know, keeps complaining, and, you know, you want to track down like their issue, and let's say they send, you know, SOAP messages or XML messages, and, you know, in there, you know, every client has a unique ID, you know, you could probably use, you know, the XFAT to, you know, put up like an expression to say if the, you know, ID from the client is, you know, 123, you know, I want the probe to, you know, capture that. Right, so, you know, this is what you can do when you use, like, the, you know, probe trigger options. Slide number 9, please. So, at this time, I'll hand off to Matthias, you know, to take us through the rest of the presentation, and you'll be looking closer. You'll be talking, you know, we'll be looking, you know, more into details on the internal workings of the probe.
Thank you, Moses. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. That was very interesting. So now we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the specific implementation of the probe and what it can mean for you as a user of the probe. So Moses explained how the probe can be configured and what capabilities it offers to you. I'm going to talk a little bit now about how the probe was implemented, which isn't readily publicly documented, but it is important to know because it does have some implications later on, as we will see, about what you can and cannot do with the probe. So essentially what the probe is that when you turn on that flag on your service, such as a multi-protocol gateway, and you say you want to turn on the probe for the rules of the service, what happens is that we will add a hidden debug action between every other action in your configured multi-step rules and policies. So that is why there's that interruption of service that Moses mentioned before. We have to stop taking in new traffic briefly, let all existing transactions complete, and then take down the configuration of the policies that was previously set up, and then start up a new configuration with these debug actions inserted. And the debug actions, again, are put before each rule is run, in between every action in the rule, and after each rule is run. And this also applies for not just request and response, but also for error rules and for also called rules that you make within your policy. Now, what is this hidden action? Well, this hidden action is a transform, essentially. It's a transform action just like you might have a transform action to run different style sheets that you wrote yourself. And this is transform action is running a special a debug style sheet that we wrote for use of the probe. And this debug style sheet, it's proprietary, so I won't get into the exact details of what it does. But essentially, it will collect all the data and metadata that it can find about the specific point in time of the transaction when the action is run. It collects what the input, what the output was from the last action that came before it, what the input would be to the next action that comes after it, and what is the metadata of the transaction currently in terms of headers and sort of timings and other things like that, which are of interest when you're trying to debug your policies. Now, it does this by calling a number of extension functions and extension elements to try and gather all the metadata about the transaction. And you might be interested to know that actually a lot of these extension functions that are used by the probe are actually also publicly available, and they're documented in the info center. And so some of these things, such as the size, for instance, of a particular input, you can also pull out and use in your own style sheets if you have a need to do so. But not all of the things that you can see in the probe are actually publicly accessible. There are a few things that were decided would be best not to expose. So the style sheet, continuing, it collects all the data it can about the point in time of this transaction, and then it makes a URL open call to a special service on the device, which then will take this and save it to the RAM disk. Just a little refresh about the RAM disks. You may be aware that there's a couple of different RAM disks on each data power device. One of them is an externally available RAM disk, which is usually the temporary directory, temporary file system that you can access from the WebGUI, the CLI. And that RAM disk is used by some parts of a data power device, but also it's available to be used by our customers for storing things on a temporary basis. But there's also an internal RAM disk that we use as well for things such like the probe and some other special services. And that is not accessible by the CLI or WebGUI. Both of these RAM disks, of course, persist for a restart or reload, but then they get cleared out over a reboot. So if you are have some probe data that you've saved, be aware that if you decide to reboot the device or the power were to go out or something like that, you would lose that. And so you should plan on exporting the probe data if you would need to save it for longer term. Okay, continuing on to the next slide, please, slide number 10. Okay, so I mentioned that the style sheets, the probe debug style sheet does a URL open extension function call to a internal service. And this is basically a service, a firewall that we are running on this port 63504 that is running bound to the local host on the device. And it's important to mention that because just if for some odd reason you decide to configure one of your other services to run on one of these ports, and there's actually a couple of other ports in this block up in that range, then it's possible that the probe or your service might not work, and so it could be good to know that this port has been reserved by the probe. Now, as I mentioned, this service, it takes that URL open call from the transform action, and then it takes all this metadata that we have collected, and it saves it all on the internal RAM disk. And then that data is then later on accessed by the web GUI. The web GUI knows where to find this data, and so when you click onto the probe button in the web GUI, it will go down and it will read all the data and metadata off of this RAM disk and display it for you in the format that you had seen before that Moses had shown. So there's mostly the probe uses this RAM disk, but there's other users as well of this RAM disk. I won't get into what those are right now, but just be aware it is possible that the RAM disk can fill up. And so in that case, then your probe might end up not working. And so if you have a situation where you think you should be capturing everything correctly on the probe, but you just don't see anything showing up in the web GUI, then that could be a possible explanation. One of the other things to be careful about when you're trying to understand it, you know, if the probe might not be working is for the user agent policy. And we'll get into a little bit more detail about that a little bit later on. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so what is the question about the user agent? Well, as you're aware, for each service, you can attach a user agent to the external manager, which is attached to every service that you have on the device. And the user agent can help control about how calls are made from the data power device. And specifically for HTTP or HTTPS calls that are leaving data power. And so the user agent can configure these things such as the use of SSL policies on your external calls or use of a HTTP proxy on your external calls and other configuration options like this. So what is sort of surprising to people sometimes is that the configuration of the user agent can also affect the calls made from the probe style sheet to the probe service on the device. So as I mentioned, the style sheet does a URL open call to this port 63504, and it's actually using HTTP to make that call over the local host. And so when it does the URL open extension function call, it will actually take a look at the user agent settings that are on the device and apply those user agent policies to the call. So if it were to sort of happen that you are doing something to change the SSL policies or the proxy policies of your HTTP calls, then you could end up inadvertently breaking the probe. What we see happen sometimes is that a person will set a blanket global policy that they always want to proxy, you know, all of their HTTP calls through one particular external place. And, of course, if you set the wild card as your match for your user agent policy, and then you start running the probe won't work because the probe, of course, can't proxy through that external service. So you'll end up seeing in the logs errors about calls from the probe to this port. There might be some strange messages about trying to contact things off the box which you didn't expect to see happen. And that can be because of the interaction of the probe and your user agent policy. That's why generally it's the best practice when you are configuring a user agent to try and set up something, you know, a little bit more specific so you don't just have a blanket wildcard statement for all your settings. there are ways you can specifically say to it that you want to exclude, you know, traffic from the probe, and that can help fix the issue that you have with the user agent policies. But it's important to be aware that so you can understand why sometimes the probe seems to be unexpectedly not working for a particular service. Okay, next slide, please. So that pretty much covers most of the main topics that we wanted to talk about for this session. There are a couple of bigger points that I wanted to make about the use of the probe, which is important to know. The probe is a great development tool. I think Moses mentioned that originally. It was designed almost as an in-house, I guess you could call it, Skunkworks project by one of our developers who needed a way to be able to understand what was going on in the style sheets. And from there, it was so useful and great that we decided to bring it out into the wider world and expose it to everybody else. But it was originally designed as a development tool, and so that is why you might have noticed some of our mentions before about the limitations of the probe, such as the limit that it only captures three transactions concurrently may seem surprising to you unless you look at from the idea that it was originally designed to be a development tool, not as a tool used for high concurrency production environments. The probe is not particularly well suited for trying to troubleshoot things under heavy load. It has a number of reasons why it's actually not particularly good for that. One of them is the fact that it's relatively heavyweight. You know, it adds a fair number of transforms to your policies. In fact, it effectively doubles the amount of transforms that you're doing on your policies. That can have a big impact on the amount of time it takes and the resources it takes to run the probe. The probe will break streaming. This is, you know, by design. If you're streaming data, then it wouldn't be possible to show all the data up nicely there in the web GUI. So the probe automatically forces your services to buffer all the data that comes in and goes out of the device, which can greatly increase the memory usage requirements, especially if you're looking at large data sets. The probe is it's possible to use the probe when you're working with large data sets, but it's kind of tricky because especially if you've got data sets up over several megabytes or even gigabytes, then you'll need to buffer a huge amount of that. You know, there'll be multiple copies of the data taken at each step along the way, and so that can quickly add up to huge amounts of memory. And also you'll end up filling up that RAM disk that I mentioned before because the probe keeps multiple copies of all the data at each step along the way, and so it can very quickly end up not working if you try and use the probe with large data sets. So we don't recommend that if you're trying to debug something with, you know, large data sets that you use the probe. Moving on to the next slide. Continuing my previous comment, as I was saying, it adds a lot of latency to your services. And so if you're trying to troubleshoot some sort of timing issue, then the probe is not necessarily the best way to do that. The probe is great for examining, you know, the inputs and outputs of your transforms, of your transformations in your style sheets, but it's not really suitable to be used for trying to troubleshoot timing issues because it does have such a drastic effect on the timing of the transactions. There's some other interesting things which are not immediately obvious, which are important to be noted about using the probe. It can modify some of the headers. And even sometimes some of the data that is sent through the device. Again, that's what makes it suitable for use as a development tool, not necessarily as a production tool. The content type specifically is something that is often surprising to our customers to notice that the turning on the probe can change how the content type is sent from the device. This has to do with the fact that the last action on every rule when you turn on the probe is now going to be a style sheet transformation. And style sheets, as you know, can change the content type depending on what is the output method of the style sheet, and so that is definitely an item to consider. And also, just to finally point out, there can be some subtle differences sometimes in how your style sheets work with the probe enabled or disabled, and it's important that you don't make it a policy to always do all your testing in QA with the probe on. We have sometimes seen that at some customers where they always make it a rule to do all their development, all their testing, all their QA with the probe on, and that they never actually turn the probe off until it comes time to move out their services into production, and then they also find out that things are maybe a little bit different, that some of the timings are subtly different. And so we recommend that, you know, when you're running your code through QA, that you test it both ways, test it both probe with a probe on and probe off. And really the testing with the probe off should be considered definitive testing, because that is what you would be using for your production environment. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, thank you. Well, that pretty much concludes all the points we wanted to make about how to use the probe. We found it helpful. There's some additional points here that you may want to try and explore when you get a chance. It can be very, very useful for understanding how data power works. I'll pause here for a second and ask Moses, is there anything else that you wanted to add to the presentation?
No, I think that was well covered, Matthias.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Moses and Matthias, for a great presentation. As Matthias mentioned, on slide 14, there is a list for some additional WebSphere product resources that you can use. The first link is the link to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Time to move on to the question and answer session.
So I think there was a question on the chat about does the probe work for JSON? And I think we can answer that it does. Isn't that correct, Moses?
That is correct. So, you know, if, you know, the JSON data is going to be converted to, you know, JSONX, right? So you'll be able to view that in the probe. I think there's another question from, you know, Nice. Says, you know, so when it comes to the modification of the content type, you know, does that happen in the case of, you know, SQL attachment or mTOR messages?
Yeah, I think we have seen that case before, that it does do so. I can't recall the specific case that Tom had right now, but we've definitely noticed types of interactions occurring previously.
Right, and I think in most cases, the part that gets affected will be the protocol headers. So, you know, depending upon the type of, you know, streaming or attachment, you know, processing policy that you have, the attachment sections might not be touched, right? So I think the, you know, question was also more specific to attachment handling. So, you know, depending upon, you know, if you're processing the attachment or not, but in most cases, whatever part of the, you know, my message, which in this case can be the SQL attachment or mTOM, you know, goes through your processing for that data to be captured, there is a potential that, you know, like the content type can be affected.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, there is one more in the chat that I'm wondering if we you may have covered it, but I just want to restate it in case we have not. Where is the concurrence probe transaction setting located?
Okay, well, so there isn't a if you're talking about the setting for changing that limit of 3, that limit is hard-coded. You can't change that. The setting on the object screen for the probe itself, if you go to the service, and I believe if you go to the service and you take a look at the tab for the probe, that is where you can change it from being bounded to unbounded.
I saw in the log file, could not attach to debugger. Is that the limit of three concurrence requirements?
No, actually, that might indicate an issue with the user agent policy that we mentioned before. If the limit was exceeded, it's a different log message where I think it would tell you specifically we hit that limit. But if it says it could not connect to debugger, it means it was trying to make that URL open call that I mentioned before, and for some reason that failed. I suppose it is also possible, though rare and likely, that the HTTP call over the loopback interface could fail for some other reason as well. Maybe such as a temporary memory shortage or something like that, but that would be pretty unusual.
At this time, there are still no questions.
So at this time, we will conclude the presentation.